Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen, here with Alex King and Bill G. Today is Tuesday, July the 23rd, 2019. It is 8 a.m. in New York and 5 a.m. in Los Angeles. That's 1 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. in Tokyo, 10 p.m. in Sydney, and I'm running out of time zones, but wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today. Your daily dose of happy. Hard to run out of time zones. There are 24 of them. I used five, but, you know. I guess what I'm saying is I haven't memorized 24 time zones yet, but that's okay. So,
yeah, well, that takes a lot.
It does take a lot. It does take a lot. It's good stuff. But we are back after taking a day off yesterday. Louis D'Souza had to, he and his family are on vacation in the Alps in Austria. I mean, if you're going to go on vacation, that's a nice place to go. But unfortunately, doesn't have great Wi-Fi, so he couldn't do a show. So we kind of canceled it for yesterday. But we're back. And we are in fine fettle. We are recovering from our world premiere on Friday. I'll speak for myself. I am recovering. I spent all day Saturday in recovery. Sunday, I spent most of the day in recovery. Yesterday, I was like in the twilight zone. I think I'm finally beginning to emerge. I mean, it was a lot of work getting ready for that thing.
And it was a lot.
And I was wiped at the end of it. I was just totally wiped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
But we got it. We got a nice response from the people who came to the live stream. So thank you if you're one of those live streamers who listened in. We appreciate your presence. And we're hoping to keep building it as we go because I think we got a good thing. We did get some good feedback from people. People did seem to like what we did. So that was good. That was really good.
Yep.
So were you also kind of in recovery after that? Alex?
A little bit. It only took me a day.
Oh, only a day.
I was just like, I'm going radio silent. No one talk to me. I'm just going to sit in the sun. And then, I tried to sit in the sun and then it was like 100 million degrees outside. So I was like, okay, I'm going to sit in the air conditioning. So the heat index was out of control this weekend.
No kidding. Yes, it was very hot. Yes.
Straight up disrespectful outside. It was insane.
But then yesterday, nice steady rain the whole day. It like didn't even get above 72 degrees. It was awesome here.
Oh, you had rain.
No, it was still 86 here, even with the rain. It only rained for 20 minutes until the thunder / tornado.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Hyannis had a tornado warning yesterday. That's pretty wild.
Freaked us out. We've never had one.
Hurricanes, yes. Tornadoes, no.
Yeah, hurricanes all day. Hail, sure. But first the thunder. I don't do thunder. And then they were like, it's a tornado. I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Well, it's tough if you've never dealt with a threat of a tornado. You don't know what the protocol is, so you just kind of freeze.
Well, yeah, and then they're like, the news is flashing, and they're like, get in your basement, get in your, you know, find your loved ones, get in your bathtub. I was like, oh, no. I don't like this at all.
It's funny, too, because there have been times where we kind of lived on the outskirts of Tornado Alley, living in Virginia. And I know, Bill, you lived in Kentucky, so you kind of lived on the outskirts of it, too. And you kind of get used to it after a while. We actually got to the point where there was one time, I remember, there was a tornado about a mile from us. It was going up Route 29, also known as the Robert E. Lee Highway. Mm-hmm. And we lived about a mile from the highway. We could see it from where we lived. Mm-hmm. And we're looking out at the storm, and you could just see the storm going up the highway, and we're saying to each other, you know, we really should be taking cover right now because that's not going to go in any direction. But we didn't because we were confident it was just going to keep going right up the highway, and it did. You know, so you can also get a little bit crazy when you live in a place like that.
I don't know what I would do. Like, I went there, and I was taking the train there, and I saw, like, all the trailer parks along where the train was going, and I was like, how are y'all living in trailers when you have tornadoes every week? I don't understand.
That's a good point.
Like, what are y'all doing?
Yeah. When I lived in Kentucky, the place where I lived we lived on almost a ginormous limestone slab. I mean, that was the geography of the area. Mm. So very few people had basements.
Mm, right.
Because, you know, you need to blast in order to get yourself a basement. And so all these houses are on slabs. So if a big tornado comes through, it just mows all those houses down.
Mm.
But the safest place in the house is usually the bathroom where they don't put windows. It's actually in the code that you don't put windows in the bathroom because when tomatoes come, you can just
go to the bathroom
when there's no window.
That's crazy.
And we had a tornado siren actually less than a mile from the house. So whenever a tornado was in the area, this siren would just go off, and it would just keep going. You know, it keep going and going and going until the threat passed.
Mm.
Mm-mm.
So that's great for attracting what you want to attract.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, like, hey, tornado's here.
You mentioned, Bill, that you had, was it 3 in 2 years? We would average at least 2 to 3 different threats every year, and it was usually in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
It usually ran from somewhere like late March to really the end of May, occasionally early June.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You'd get tornado warnings, you get tornado watches, you'd get microbursts, you get just about every kind of high energy storm threat you can possibly get. And then when you were done with those, then it was hurricane season. So,
right. Oh, well, that's always nice.
So there was actually lots of opportunity to practice focusing on what you prefer instead of on what you don't prefer.
Mm-hmm. Which,
you know, it's one of those growth opportunity things, right? You're faced with a thing you absolutely do not want, and now you're expected to focus on what you do want in the midst of it. It's a challenge.
That's the difference between me and my mother when it comes to remembering law of attraction and certain things. Like last night, I hear the alarms go off, and I'm like getting my dogs, and we're going in the bathroom, and I'm like, Mom, let's go. And she's like, no, I'm going to sit here and finish my puzzle. We're going to be fine. And she did not move from her bed. And I was like, you know what? And I'm yelling from the bathroom, when the air conditioner hits you in the head, I'm not taking you to the hospital. And she's like, I'm doing my puzzle.
And actually, that's a great segue to our topic today.
Our topic
I thought we could try today was about how people from our past can teach us about ourselves, especially about what we do not prefer.
Well, my mom's my present, so I wouldn't say people from my past, but I get where you're going.
I was going to say, it doesn't have to be from the past. It can be from the present. It can even be from the future, as Linda Armstrong demonstrated to me. But
Absolutely, yes. And what brought this up was this whole idea of, again, we are in a Mercury retrograde period. Now, I'm not generally a follower of astrology. And I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, because last time, it was Mercury retrograde. You know, we made a lot of jokes about it. We were all like, you know, hey, whatever. The sky is falling. And then we went out of the Mercury retrograde period. And now we're back in one. It started in the beginning of July, and this one ends the end of August. And I just noticed something interesting about it is my wife and I especially, you know, we talk a lot about the future. We're running a business, and I'm also the president of the board of directors for the Spiritual Response Association, talking all about the future. And then all of a sudden Mercury retrograde hits, and then all of a sudden we're talking about the past again. And so I did some looking up, and Mercury retrograde asks you to review, revise, rethink, and reconsider issues in your life. So, again, so if you find, I don't know, this has been happening to me. I don't know if this is happening to you guys, but have you been experiencing things where you have been kind of reevaluating things in your past or reconsidering issues that have been going on in this retrograde period? Because whenever the planets appear in the sky as if they're moving backwards, that means when they're in retrograde, and Mercury in particular is about reevaluating your values, reevaluating your memories.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, certainly. I can confirm that. I have a question and a point I want to bring up. I guess they're all kind of wrapped up into one, which is if the retrograde period is a little over a month and a half, in fact, from what you described, it almost sounds like it's 2 months long. That's approximately half of the entire cycle. Because Mercury is an 88-day cycle going around the sun. So, you know, if you're talking like 45 days, that means half the time we're in retrograde.
Pretty much, yes.
That's crazy.
So, well, okay. So it kind of raises an interesting point. Everybody talks about, and we talked about this 88 days ago. I remember this. You know, everybody talks about how, you know, in retrograde, you know, electronics don't work properly, and people have things happen in their lives that are uncomfortable, and all this kind of negative
stuff. Just everything goes wrong in retrograde.
Doesn't this strike you guys that there's something kind of messed up with an idea that says that everything's going to go wrong half the time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's basically what we're saying here. You know, half the time everything's going to start going wrong. The other half the time you're going to be in recovery.
Yeah. I actually did some research on that whole electronics thing with Mercury retrograde. And that actually, the jury's still out on that one. Now, I have noticed that our cable goes out a little more often, but I don't know. I haven't done any statistics. It just seems to go out more often during retrograde period. Because
are you paying the bill during Mercury retrograde? I don't know what's happening.
Oh, well, I am paying my bill.
You will pay, and you will pay it now.
It's just what I've noticed, too, is about the whole idea of looking backwards. And that's really what a retrograde period is all about. And that's why people are very uncomfortable during this period, because when they're looking backwards, you're not always very happy with what you have done in the past. You want to think, okay, that's in the past. It's done. I want to look in the future now.
Well, plus also, it kind of gets in the way of living in the now. I mean, if you're looking in the past, you can't really be looking. You can either be looking at the past or you can be looking at now. You can't really look at both at the same time. It's either one or the other, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Especially when what you're thinking about your past relationships. It's like, oh crap. But again, it's very interesting when you look at past relationships, though, and you think of all the mistakes that you made in that past relationships, who you attracted at the time because of where you were in your mind at that particular moment. And the thing is, we don't change that much. As life goes on, our core personalities generally stay the same. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can work on attracting better things in our lives. Yes, we can work on these things. But in moments of weakness and moments of just living your day-to-day life, it's very hard to get out of some of those habits, those thinking habits.
Unless we've been working on changing the habits and doing that habitually. If you do that habitually, then, I mean, I was noticing that recently. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, I remember what the topic was. I was talking with Cindy Chavez after one of the podcasts and noting to her that she and I have this ongoing conversation about what we think is going to happen in the 2020 presidential election here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And I keep saying the same thing over and over again about what I think is going to happen. And I also note that I have a background in political science. And I was kind of asking myself in conversation with her, I wonder why it is I feel so certain about what I think is going to happen this time around. Because in the past, I have never had this level of certainty. And now, I mean, I'm like almost 100% certain that I know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized what the difference was. I've changed. It isn't that circumstances have changed so dramatically, although we are certainly in a different set of circumstances than, say, 10 years ago, which are different from 20 years ago, and so on and so forth. But it's more that I've been doing all this work on myself. I've been working to focus more on what I prefer and not on, you know, less on what I don't prefer. I've gotten to the point now where, despite the fact that Cindy and I have this conversation, I really don't pay much attention to politics anymore, which I know is going to floor Bill, because Bill and I talked about politics every week for a while there.
I don't pay attention at all.
You don't pay attention at all? Okay.
I don't pay attention at all.
I couldn't care less.
Yeah. Well, and it's good for you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the course of, I mean, for me, it was something that I needed to kind of pull myself away from. You talked about stuff from your past. Well,
right.
In some ways, that was me going back into my past and hanging on to stuff I didn't need to hang on to. And as I have retrained my mind and retrained my focal point, so to speak, so that I am no longer attached to that the way I was, that's where I found that I have actually changed. So my views have changed. My feeling of attachment is virtually gone on that point anyway. Now, I'm still working in other areas, but it's virtually gone. And so I point to that as a way of saying we do change. We change at actually whatever rate we want to change at. Now, I will agree that the overall tendency is for individuals to change slowly. But it doesn't mean that's written in stone anywhere. It just means that's what we tend to do. Mm-hmm. We can change quickly if we really want to. It's just a question of what we want to do. So I say that, I guess, parenthetically to what you were saying, Bill, because you're right. People do tend to change slowly. It's just not like we have to.
Yeah, right, right. And even so, I mean, you have a background in political science, so you're always going to want to take a peek.
But less and less. That's what's so cool.
Right, right. But until you've completely changed your thinking to the point where you're like, I don't know, I don't care. It's all illusion anyway. Mm. It's all trying to mirror something that I need to be working on in myself anyway. So, and I'm done with that. I'm finished. I'm not buying into even reading about people getting hyped up about stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still going to be tempted to look back on from time to time. And I do. I even though I've divorced myself from politics and the point where I used to be spending hours and hours every day just combing through websites and reading stories. And, you know, I had my favorite journalists and I had my favorite websites that I would go to, and they would tell me the same story over and over again. Because, again, you know, you set your computer gets to know who you are based off of your likes and where your browsing history is. Oh, and so it just feeds you more of the same. And I'm happy to say now that I've actually started to enjoy going back to Facebook because I've been very judicious with my likes to the point now where most of my newsfeed is positive affirmations.
Aha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I've got, I think I'm up to like 120, 100, 130, you know, friends on Facebook. And with that many people, you would think that you'd get an interesting smorgasbord of positive and negative. But again, the algorithms pay attention to what you like and what you don't like, and they adjust the news feed accordingly.
Yep.
And same thing with Instagram, you know, any of these social media sites.
I always thought it was really fascinating that the social media programmers mirror law of attraction so closely. I wonder how many of them actually did it consciously.
Interesting.
Yeah. So now in my social media feed, I'm attracting the messages that I want to see, and I'm not attracting the ones that I don't want to see. And occasionally one or two sneak in there. And then, you know, if it's somebody that who is habitually negative, then I won't unfriend, but I will unfollow.
Oh, me too. Yeah, I don't hesitate.
And then my news feed's clean again.
That's right.
Yeah.
Although I have found an even cleaner way to deal with it, and that is just not go there at all.
That's true. So I'm promoting a business, so I have to go back.
Yeah, that is. But I'm limiting myself to, like, I mean, you mentioned news. I now spend maybe a minute a day on the news, and I spend maybe a total out of like three or four sessions, maybe 5 minutes, probably closer to two or three on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I found, at first I was doing it just because I couldn't tolerate it anymore. Now I found that I don't care, which sounds terrible, but I've gotten to the point where I don't care.
Because like I said, it's all illusion. It's all smoke and mirrors. And the thing is, even if you've gone out of your way to choose certain websites where you are confident that what you're receiving is true information, it's still just reflecting back what you want to see.
This is true. Yeah, it's very, very true.
And what you believe, because every website, every journalist has an angle, and that angle is speaking to a certain reader, and that certain reader is looking for a story to say a certain thing, and that's what you get.
Yeah, that's it.
You get exactly what you ask for.
Self-fulfilling prophecies.
That's right.
That's what they are.
And what I found that when I was a news junkie is that what was reflected back at me is, oh no, the sky is falling. It's the end of the world. It's the end of the world, whatever. And sometimes I get these little feeds like, oh my God, we're about to go to war. And I'm like, no, we're not. No, we're not. You know how many times I've heard that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But every time that came up, that kind of stuff went in the past, I would be like, oh my God, I got to read more about this. Oh my God, I got to read more about this. And then that would increase my anxiety. That would increase, that would put me in a lower energetic vibration. And then I would find myself staying up at night worrying about, oh my gosh, what if this, what if this, what if this zombie apocalypse? Oh my God. And it was, whoa, mm-hmm. hold the phone here, you know?
Yeah. It gets pretty overwhelming. And I've often thought about this. I've talked about this with various co-hosts here on the show. The phenomenon of us as human beings dipping into what Abraham calls the contrast a lot and doing mm-hmm. it regularly and repeatedly, and that we all came here to experience the contrast. And the contrast is sort of the nice politically correct way of saying dealing with the crappy crap.
Right.
Dealing with all this stuff that we really don't like. We spend a lot of time focused on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm realizing that there may be something to the idea that we come here in order to explore it, partly because I think perhaps we come here in order to learn how to do the basic activity of being selective, to learn more, to be not to learn that it needs to be done, but learn to develop the skill, I guess is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Right? Develop the skill of selecting. When am I going to focus on the stuff that I don't like? When am I going to focus on the stuff I do like? Mm-hmm. And learning how to be selective in that way. Maybe that is why we're coming here, because it certainly matches my experience. Mm-hmm. Does it match everybody's experience? Probably not. But for me, it kind of reinforces it. I don't know. That's mm-hmm. my view.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you think, Alex. I mean, you are always an interesting foil on this kind of thing, because your take is quite different from mine on so many of these things. So,
I mean, I'm going to go back to the whole thinking about, you know, or regretting the past and with this whole Mercury and retrograde situation. And I tend not to do that. I subscribe to the idea that, you know, if it wasn't for the mistakes and things that we've gone through and the stress and struggle that we've gone through, we wouldn't be the people we are today. That's and true. If you like who you are today, then it shouldn't matter.
Right.
Of course, this is another interesting point that you're raising here, and it's one I addressed with somebody on Facebook for one of my 30 seconds today. Seriously, that was about all I took. But she was, I don't even remember what she was raising an issue about. There was something. I know what it was. She's in college and she doesn't have any friends. And
I saw that.
Anybody. Mm-hmm. And so I was pointing out that very often we're really tough on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we can go through an approach like you're talking about, but we can still feel good about ourselves, but we can also be tough on ourselves and be hard on ourselves. And in that way, we're really not being very loving toward ourselves. We can be loving toward ourselves in other ways. That's the thing I'm really becoming very cognizant of lately. We are almost never purely one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
There's always like shades of gray.
Of course. Yeah.
And sometimes we are focusing the way we don't want to, maybe a lot of the time, maybe most of the time. And some of the times we're focusing the way we do want to. And it's still us every single time.
Mm-hmm.
We're still making the decisions. Even if we don't think we're making the decisions, we're still making the decisions.
True.
And we're not doing it consistently.
Right.
Because that's what we do. Right. I think it's important to remember that. Because mm-hmm. when we remember that, then okay, now we're no longer stuck in the realm of, I have to make a massive change right now.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Things are bad and I have to make a massive change. No, actually you don't. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is make a small change and then another small change and then another small change. Right?
Yeah. And remembering the mistakes of the past also help you do that.
It should help you
remember. And again, you know, and July also energetically is all about remembering.
But I also remember what Abraham tells us. Abraham teaches us that you don't get to a better feeling place by telling the old story over and over again.
Right. Well, I'm not talking about telling the old story again. I'm talking about as you're moving forward, as you decided to make the changes, knowing where the changes need to take place by remembering the mistakes or remembering the feelings of the emotions that are attached to the people and the events of your past.
I understand what you're saying, and that's certainly been a topic that we've addressed here, and I've talked about it with other hosts too. I do think that there's an overemphasis on that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think there's an overemphasis, I mean, you seem to be nodding your head too, Alex. The reason I think there's an overemphasis is it's still focusing on what we don't want. Maybe we're doing it a little bit more clinically, but we're still focusing on what we don't want. Abraham's really clear about it. You want to you want to actually just change your focus to what you want.
Right.
In fact, they even, I don't remember exactly what they've said about it, but I remember kind of in general, they talk about how if you're spending time, if you're starting from the belief that you have to go back and relive pieces of your childhood that were so difficult or relive earlier parts of your life that were so difficult in order to get past them, that's not necessarily true. Now, I have personally modified that in my own thinking to say, well, it can be valuable to go back and look at that stuff. But I also subscribe to what they're saying. I mean, that's ultimately, you have to at some point decide to shift to focusing on what you do like, on what you do prefer, on what you do want. Mm-hmm. And until you do that, you're not going to start shifting your life. And I think it's an important point because so often we get stuck on focusing on all that stuff in the past. At some point, we have to just make a mental decision like, you know what? I'm done with that. Even if, you know, 10 seconds from now, I find myself pulled back there, I'm at least now committing to doing whatever I can to start incrementally shifting my attention away from that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because that stuff isn't good for me.
Right.
I mean, is that what you think, Alex? I mean, you're giving me, giving me a lot of yeses. I never really know for sure if you're just yes or if you're actually saying.
No, I never just yes.
You never do? Oh, okay. I'm glad
well,
you know you're not a yes woman. That makes me feel
I'm good. Not a yes woman, no.
Okay.
But what I was thinking when Bill was talking is that you can learn from the past. However, if you like dwell, not dwell, but like looking back on the past to avoid future mistakes is not always the way to go because there's like even the tiniest variable can make the whole situation different.
Right.
So you attack it in a different way. So you might not learn, you might not have the same effects of that your past situation resulted in. I mean, it's like I was telling my friend the other day, she was like, well, I'm afraid that so-and-so is doing this because he's acting like blah, 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 you know, the other person from the past. And I said, well, listen, you can't punish the new guy for the last guy's mistake. That's one has nothing to do with the other. So it's
well, you can, but it's not a good idea.
Well, yeah, it doesn't help you in any way.
Not at all. No,
you're sitting here being paranoid over something that your ex did. Like it's a totally different person, totally different time, totally different situation. So you gotta move on.
Well, actually, it is possible though that if her relationship pattern is the same and she's attracting the same type of people, even though that guy might not be doing the exact same thing the ex did. Mm-hmm. If he didn't learn the lesson from that past relationship, it could be repeating itself, but just a different flavor.
Yeah.
Like for example, if you deal with somebody who's, say you attract people who habitually cheat on you.
You're right, right.
And so you have a relationship, the person cheated on you, you caught him. All right, relationship's over, that's it. Okay, now I'm going to go out and find somebody else. And then you attract somebody else is going to cheat on you.
But that's because you're focusing on the cheating part.
Right, because you're focusing on the cheating part.
Right, and so, you're like, oh, I don't want someone who's going to cheat on me. And then you go looking for someone and that's who you get because you said what you don't want.
Right, right,
as opposed to saying, I would like someone to, you know, treat me well and you know, whatever the opposite of cheating is.
and actually, where that and how that person felt about being cheated on is the emotional element, and that's where the energy is. Mm-hmm. The emotion is where the energy is.
Yeah.
And so they're thinking to them, even if they're saying, I want someone who's going to be faithful to me, but in their heart, they're still hurting from that cheating. They're still attracting the cheating.
Exactly. Exactly.
Something we know a little bit about, Alex, because we wrote about a character who does.
Sure do.
You know, deals with. I mean, she isn't so much attracting cheaters. She attracts people who are outright marriage cheaters. I mean, they're married men.
Right? Adulterers, yes.
They're adulterers, yes.
Yes.
Oh, my God. So, and again, so that's what, you know, again, you know, bringing it back to what I do with my SRT clients is about 50 to 60% of my clients are relationship clients.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they've found themselves in a pattern with their current spouse or with their boyfriends or the fact that they're single because they keep attracting the same thing over and over again, the same negative thing and over again. And they're like, you know, I've tried this. I've tried different ways of changing my attitude about that. But it turns out it was actually a soul program. This was something that they came into this lifetime to actually experience. And they're like, okay, you've been there, you've done that, you got the T-shirt, we can clear it, we can move on and do and attract something else. Mm-hmm. So it's all about reframing their belief.
Well, that's also where the Abraham point comes in.
Right, exactly.
The Abraham point is, instead of putting all that energy out there, why not just change your attention to what you want instead?
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And it's and I use Abraham quite a bit in my work. So again, it's part of that. Actually, a book that I started reading recently called Energy Speaks. It's a new one by Lee Harris. Lee Harris is another energy intuitive. He's a channeler. He channels a group of entities called Z's. Mm. And their message is very similar to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why he calls them the Z's is because they all had Z names.
Oh, okay. Because I had all kinds of humor running through my head right there.
Lee Harris is cool. The first one was Zechariah. The other one was Zephaniah. And, you know, they were all had these Z names. But then eventually they conglomerated into a single voice, which he just calls the Z's. Just like Abraham is a conglomeration of different entities, this is also the same kind of thing. And the message is essentially the same, too. In fact, he has a whole chapter in his book about the law of attraction. And, you know, it's Abraham Light.
Abraham Light.
wasn't Lee Harris one of the presenters in The Secret?
He might have been. I don't know. The Secrets came out quite a few years ago, and Lee Harris really hasn't really come into his own as a major player in only the last few years.
I could be wrong. I'm not sure.
In fact, the Energy Speaks only came out this year, and that's his first major publishing company publication. But he does an energy update every month. In fact, a lot of energy intuitives do an energy update every month. I listen to actually a few of them, and it's remarkable how similar they all are.
Yeah.
So the message is generally the same, because the current of energy, it's the current of energy. If you know how to read it, you know how to read it.
But Mercury retrograde, which is what brought up where your topic came from.
Right.
Every time that topic comes up, I mean, I have experienced situations where it felt like, you know, everything was falling apart, and it did seem to happen during a retrograde period. On the other hand, considering that retrograde happens half the time, I guess it's not terribly surprising. But I think about, well, okay, you have this retrograde going on, and you got people reacting to it, and I ask myself, how much are they attracting through what they're reacting to because they're justifying it by being Mercury in retrograde?
Yeah, I feel like they're just co-signing because that's what they say. Yeah, they're like, oh, Mercury is in retrograde, so everything that, you know, bad will happen, and that's what's happening to me. Like, you're just co-signing with it.
So, in other words, to extend your metaphor is co-signing. That's off of a loan. So basically you're saying they're borrowing trouble.
Yes, right. They're borrowing bad energy, yes.
Yeah, and that's another reason why I decided to look into it a little further, and I saw that it was more of a looking back at your own issues to try and figure out what you're attracting that is bad, you know, what you're attracting that you don't prefer. And so that way you can change the dialogue into something that you do prefer. And also you can't just take Mercury retrograde is going to be doing X, Y, and Z every single time, because there are, there's
different variables.
There's nine other planets in the solar system.
I believe there are eight others, actually.
I was just going to say. Actually.
You're forgetting Charon, and you're forgetting...
I didn't realize they were planets, but okay.
Charon's the same size as Pluto. So if you're going to call Pluto a planet, you got to call Charon a planet, too.
Well, we don't call Pluto a planet. That's the point.
Oh, no. They went back to calling it a planet.
Oh, yes. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
Yeah, they decided it's a planet again. Yeah,
I can't keep up. It's like, oh, eggs are bad for you. Eggs are good for you. Wait, what is it today? Like,
yeah.
I forget all that. I just have eggs.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of astrologers go further into some of the larger asteroids are part of the their charts as well.
Okay. Considering how many asteroids there are.
That's team too much right there. I can't.
Well, large asteroids. I mean, we're talking little planetoid types.
but literally there are millions of asteroids.
Yes,
so how do you know how many large ones there are? I mean, who's counted them?
Right. And like, what are the names? Like 1.263? Like, what are we doing now? Like,
yeah, right.
There's got to be a stopping point.
There's no stopping point. There's millions. Like you said, there's millions of them out there. So.
I know, right. but that's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, we're already counting the planets and what they do to us and all that stuff. But now we're asteroids? Really? Really?
Well, and there's also the moon, and there's also the...
But every planet's got, like, well, except for us, got like a million moons. Like, we don't have time for this.
Yeah. And did you know that our moon is the only one that's in a closed orbit? Every moon in the solar system spins and has a day-night cycle
that
while they're in the orbit, and ours is the only one that's in a trapped rotation where we only see the one face of it.
Hmm.
No wonder the man and moon face always stays the same, I tell you.
That's right. And there are other theories with that. If you read David Wilcock, there's another theory on that one which will blow your mind, but I won't get into that here.
This is actually very appropriate. This is apropos as far as I'm concerned, talking about this role of astrology. Because I've never really been one who bought into it, so I have to put that disclaimer out there. I've never really bought into the whole astrological concept.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have new reason not to, now that I'm a law of attraction, deliberate creator.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of that is outward-facing stuff, saying all this stuff is causing all my stuff in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And no... As a deliberate creator, I know all of my stuff is created internally.
Right.
I do the creating. I create with everything that happens. So if I am responding to all this external astrology stuff, that's me giving my power externally. It's me that's doing it.
Well, what's interesting about that is I recently had my chart done. And how you get your chart done is you tell the astrologer, the person that... when you were born, where you were born, and what time you were born.
Yeah.
And they do, they run this computer program that tells them exactly where all the planets were at that exact moment of your birth. And mm-hmm. then it comes up with this whole personality profile.
Mm.
Yep.
And the personality profile, when I read it, I was like, wow, that's actually pretty much on the money.
Mm-hmm.
As far as my overall personality, how I approach the world. Now, knowing this now I know what parts of my chart are the parts that I prefer and now which ones are the ones I don't prefer.
You mean you didn't know that before you read the chart?
I did not. There were certain aspects of my personality that I simply believed was just part of my core, part of everybody's core. You know, so there. You know, because I lived with it my entire life, I figured it was just normal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so when I read it in the chart and realized that not everybody has these same core personality quirks or these same core personality beliefs,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, aha, okay, that is something I don't prefer. That is something actually I would like to change. Then I can then inform the universe. Okay, I don't prefer that. I prefer the opposite of that. Now I can work to change it.
But
now
that's
actually something to work on.
When does knowledge of those core personality quirks, as you describe them,
mm-hmm.
when does that knowledge start to go beyond its boundaries, so to speak, and start moving into the realm of external forces are controlling my life?
Well, where it gets out of control is for those people who read their chart and say, okay, that's me.
Yep. Facts.
That's me.
That's me.
Take it or leave it.
Yep.
You know, and they go on a date and they say, here's my chart. You don't like it? Go away.
Yep.
And that's not what it's used for. That's not what it's supposed to be used for. What it's supposed to be used for is to get yourself a baseline of what your core personality is according to what the sign is, so that way you can start working on those things in your sign that you need to be working on, and figure out what is part of your natural abilities to attract the good things in your life, and use those natural ones that you prefer to help overcome the things that you don't prefer.
Mm-hmm. And well, I'm kind of being a little bit unfair here because I'm about to cite my sister, who's very much into astrology. And
I was just thinking of her the whole time, actually.
And who's also the director of The Grass is Greener, so I have to be a little careful there too. But she has long advocated for the idea that astrology is useful for her in everyday life, not just knowing where she came from, but also figuring out what she's going to do next. So mm-hmm. she's gone beyond knowing who she is, so to speak, or who she originally was when she was born. And she's turned it into, like many people into astrology do, turned it into a daily guidebook, right. So to speak.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a lot of outward facing.
Yeah.
That's actually, in many ways, excessive, mm-hmm. I would say. I would say it's excessive outward facing. Now, there are going to be some people who are into astrology who aren't going to like that too much, like me saying that, because they actually take this as being, you know, this is really useful stuff for me. Mm-hmm. This is stuff that I get value out of every single day. Well, I'm not going to be one to say you shouldn't get value out of something. If you get value out of it, you get value out of it. Mm-hmm. But I still wonder inside, you know, how much time are those of us who do this, how much time are we spending outward facing when we could be inward facing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually have an interesting foil along with that too, because I'm an identical twin.
Ah, yes. So
not only do I have somebody out there who has almost my exact same chart, astrology speaking, he also has my exact same DNA. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the tiny variable is the time that you were born.
Right. We're 5 minutes apart.
Right.
And it's amazing what that 5 minutes has done in mm-hmm. terms of who we are as people. Right. And, you know, last week we were talking about meeting, people from your past and reconnecting with people from your past and social media and whatever. Mm-hmm. And this year is my 30th anniversary. I'm 30th high school reunion coming up. Uh-huh. And I have the opportunity to go. You know, it's all the way down in New Jersey and whatever. But my friend who moved here, who was in my high school graduating class, he now lives in Rutland with me. And he's like, hey, let's carpool. And I'm like, sure.
Such enthusiasm.
Why you guys hate going to reunions? Like, that is like my favorite thing. That was the only thing I went to in the last 10 years.
Well, it's interesting.
Because you had a different experience, Alex.
True.
Because something interesting happened while we were in lunch. He and I were in four of the same clubs together. Mm-hmm. And over lunch, he asked me, were you in this club with me or was it just your brother? And I was in that class. I was in that club all 4 years. I was fiercely devoted to that club. It was our Madrigal choir. So we sang. We dressed up in Renaissance outfits, and we sang the sacred music, and also the English drinking songs and whatever in all a cappella. We were beautiful. We did this big chamber choir thing. I was in it for 4 years and I was fiercely devoted to that group. And here he is 30 years later asking me if I was even there.
Mm.
And that was my entire high school experience.
Mm.
Being an identical twin and being I think of myself as a fairly charismatic guy. I mean, I can get in front of a group of people and talk and people remember me, but whenever my brother's around, they don't remember me. I am not remembered because his personality is just a little stronger than mine. And because his personality is just a little bit stronger than mine, I'm invisible.
Hmm.
And so that was my high school experience. So I went, when I went to my 10-year anniversary, a 10-year reunion, barely anybody talked to me. They all talked to Adam because Adam was, you know, Adam's my twin brother. They all talked to him because, you know, he was the lead in the plays. He was the soloist. He was the theater major in college. He was, you know, he got like a full free ride to college as a theater person. And there I was hanging the lights. Because, you know, even though I was just as good as he was in a lot of ways in the theater and singing and dancing and all that stuff, he was a little bit better than I was. And if you're putting on a stage play, you can't have two of the leads looking alike.
This is true. It throws things off a lot, unless they're brothers on the play, you know.
And we did that for a while. We, you know, when we were in high school, we did try the twin thing. We went to New York and went to auditions. We were in a couple commercials together. You know, we were trying to be the next double mint twins.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we were not that good looking. And second of all, when you go to New York and you go to those catacalls, you get to learn real quick. You are just a name.
Yeah,
you're not even a name.
You're just a number.
You're just a number. You are.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who have been doing this business a lot longer than you have.
Mm-hmm. So all that was a way of addressing the question of what, first of all, what it's like to be in high school and what your response is in high school, but also talking about outward facing versus inward facing.
Outward facing versus inward facing. Absolutely. It wasn't until college that I was actually able to understand and live my own life.
Right.
Because before that, I was always in the shadow of somebody else. And so I had a major identity crisis.
Mm.
And so whenever I get invited to go back and meet old high school friends, you know, and I get down to talking to them, and they're like, what were you doing again? Where were you? You were there? I don't remember you there.
That sucks.
It does. I mean, now you understand why, and my experience wasn't as a twin. My experience was as a wallflower, but nevertheless, it's very similar in that sense. You can understand why, you know, going to a reunion is not exactly attractive to us. I mean, my friend had to talk me into going to my 40th, and I almost didn't go.
Yeah, I had to talk my friend into going too.
Yeah.
And like legit, my date was like, no, I'm paying for your ticket. We're all going. He's like, but I don't want to talk to anybody. I was like, well, nobody wants to talk to you with that attitude, sir.
Yeah.
And I went in order to talk with my friend because I like my friend and I wanted to chat with him some. And they have this DJ playing music really, really loud, so we couldn't hear each other anyway.
But it's very fascinating that this all happened while we got into this retrograde period.
Mm.
So, you know, the invitation to the reunion came up. This, my friend, you know, moved up to Rutland, and we had this lunch together. And so here we are, we're reconnecting and whatever. And now I'm remembering what it was like to be literally invisible in high school. And I'm like, okay, what is this teaching me about myself? What is this teaching me about what I prefer and what I don't prefer? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself, well, what I prefer is for people to remember who I am. What I prefer is for people to see me as being something different than somebody else's shadow. And so, you know, the invitation comes out and I'm like, okay, I think I want to pass on this one because I don't want to put myself into a situation again where I'm leaving thinking, yeah, here I am. I came in with this expectation that people would remember me. And again, they don't remember me because, again, my brother's in the room.
Well, see, you're going in with the wrong attitude.
If I went into it, well, you could say that it's the wrong attitude. But again, it's about what I prefer and what I don't prefer.
I wouldn't say it's the wrong attitude, but it's certainly an expected attitude.
It is an expected attitude, yes. Right.
But what I was saying is you need to go in there saying, okay, they may not remember me from high school, but they're going to remember me this reunion.
Now, that's an idea. That's a very interesting idea. Yeah.
And I have considered doing that, you know, going just to show up, just to be there and say, okay, it's been 30 years. It's not.
He's like, I may not remember Bill from high school, but I hung out with him last night and he was a ball of fun.
And he was like, yeah, it could be. It could work out that way.
You know, because everyone's personalities have changed in 30 years. So,
but again, I did go to my 10th and I went to my 15th. Mm-hmm. And I had a lousy time both times. Now, mm-hmm. granted, 10 and 15, you're still in that early stage, especially the 10. You're still in your 20s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you've got this, at a 10-year reunion, you've got this whole one-upmanship show going on.
Facts.
here I am. I haven't reached 30 yet, but I'm on my way to my first million.
right.
And then you get the other people at the 10-year reunion who still haven't figured out what they want to do with their lives.
Mm.
And then, and then at the 15, you know, people are starting to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 20, the kids are getting a little older. And then, you know, once you get to the 30 and the 40 year, now you've got some years behind you.
Feel like at the 30 year, now it's kind of like repeated itself. It's like you're at the 10, but it's not about you now. It's about what your kids are doing. So now you got to one up like, well, my kid does this.
Right. My kid has his own YouTube channel.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's
it.
He actually just turned 11 last Friday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, that's good.
He did a birthday stream, 3.5 hours doing a stream of playing video games.
There was a lot of birthdays on the 19th, let me tell you.
Yes, they certainly were.
That's crazy.
And the grass is greener had its birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did.
And our lead had her birthday on the 20th.
Yep.
Yep, so a lot of birthdays going on.
Yep.
While we have a few minutes left, though, I still want to go back to one key point about Mercury retrograde and past stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I wonder what would happen to the popularity of the phenomenon of Mercury in retrograde if more and more people decide, you know what, I'm not going to allow that to affect my thinking. I'm just going to focus on what I prefer. I'm not going to mess around with all that stuff anymore.
That's what I do. Yeah.
I wonder what would happen. I mean, and I don't expect that kind of experiment to be something you can actually carry out because people are going to do what they're going to do. So,
that's right.
But I just wonder.
Any large population, they're going to do whatever they're going to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But still, I kind of wonder about it. I mean, the world is our mirror, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in the role of it being our mirror, it's going to keep reflecting back to us what we keep looking at. You know, so we keep looking at Mercury in retrograde. We're going to start getting the results that we expect from Mercury in retrograde.
I would argue that when people don't ascribe to it on a conscious level, there is still an unconscious energetic current that they will still tend to follow along. Because I've noticed that this phenomenon happens with believers and unbelievers alike.
Mm-hmm.
The major Christian holidays. You know it's a holiday because of all the decorations. You know it's a holiday because of different things going on. Even if you don't believe in that particular holiday, even though you're not something's going, you know something's going on. It does affect you. Because it does affect your world. I mean, granted, it's still more of an outer thing, but even if you're a complete shut-in, there are still memories, there are still currents of energy that are still happening that we are all sensitive to, and we're actually becoming more sensitive to as we move more and more to this more energetic sensitive period in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I also think it's true that when we are externally focused for whatever reason. I mean, in this case, it's about Christmas or Mercury retrograde. I like the fact that you brought up the unconscious mind. Both Abraham and Neville Goddard and others have pointed out that the conscious and subconscious minds are really all part of the same thing.
Yes.
They're really not separate at all. Mm-hmm. We treat them as separate, but they're really, really not. And my favorite way to describe it is the subconscious mind is the stuff that we're just kind of doing on automatic pilot that we started doing a while ago and that we just mm-hmm. never really changed the pattern on. Mm-hmm. So once again, I have to ask, well, what happens if we decide to deliberately shift the way that we're going to focus in a period of Mercury retrograde? Because I think one thing that happens is we start to reprogram that subconscious mind just mm-hmm. by doing that.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. I would strongly agree. Now it does take a conscious effort to reprogram that.
It always takes a boy. Yes. That's the one thing I've learned more than anything else. It always takes an effort when you have so much of a history of going by default, as right. we right. all do.
Yeah. Right.
So it does take an effort.
So to go along with your example, you know, what if, you know, people were to reprogram themselves to not follow along with it? You know, not to believe in it or whatever, then yes, yeah. They're probably not going to fall in line with it whenever it happens.
Or at least be less susceptible to it.
Yes, yes.
That's how I'm living.
But for those people who are not aware, who are the people who are happy to be asleep at the wheel, they are still going to be affected by it because there is an undercurrent energetic current which is kind of guiding their subconscious mind.
Yeah. But in other words, they're on autopilot.
They're on autopilot. And so people on autopilot are going to respond, whereas those of us who have made a conscious effort to not respond because we prefer not to respond, mm-hmm. we are not going to respond.
Which gives Alex and I a lot to write about where the grass is greener is concerned.
Yeah.
In fact, that's where all drama comes from when you think about it.
Yes, yes.
It's pretty crazy. We only have a couple minutes, and I realized, Alex, we haven't done our promos. We have to do our promos before we're done.
Oh, do it up.
So first things first, become a subscriber. Very easy to do, loatoday.net. If follow the directions at the top of the page, and just like that, you're a subscriber. Be sure you share. And how do you do the YouTube side?
You go to YouTube and search LOA Today podcast videos, and once you've done that, you will hit the subscribe button. And next to the subscribe button, there is a little bell, and make sure you click always so you will always be notified every time we go live.
Uh-huh. And Bill, anything coming up on your speaking circuit? I know you're out and about. You're a man about town. You're a man about the whole Northeastern corridor.
Yes. I'm going to be doing a speaking engagement at the Mind Body Soul Expo in Saratoga Springs, New York. That's August 11th and 12th. And I will also be at the Enlightenment Festival in Portland, Maine on September 28th and 29th. And I have another event coming up in October at the Pyramid National Holistic Center here in Rutland. We haven't nailed down a date yet, but that is on the horizon.
All right. Lots of stuff coming up. And anything in the spoiler world that we need to know about, Alex?
Oh, my God. Everybody, all you Veronica Mars fans, all you marshmallows, if you haven't seen the most current season, you haven't binged it yet, please do. And then let me know how you feel about the ending because it was rough.
Ooh, ooh. What a shock. Roughness and drama.
It was horrible. It was horrible.
Oh, it sounds traumatic the way you're saying it.
It was!
Well,
a plot twist at every turn. It was a great season.
Okay. Well, fortunately, we don't have enough time. Otherwise, you'd be giving us some spoilers. But we have to cut you off right there.
Yeah.
But interesting topic. Thanks for bringing it up, guys. I appreciate that very much. Thanks to our live streamers. Thanks to our podcast listeners, because you guys are the ones we really do this for. We appreciate you very much. We will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.